Good morning. I will call us to order. We have a quorum present and ask that we stand and do the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good morning. Welcome to Picnic Day here at the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors. I heard there was a picnic. Perhaps Supervisor Benrud or Supervisor Sobranek would like to give us a last-minute update. No menu recitation today, please.
And four, Manager. Everything's all set. A few people I would like to thank. I'd like to thank Jim Spiropoulos for the view of the lake, which we never had before. All the brush is cleared, and it's a beautiful sight from the the meal will be catered by the Varsity Club again this year. I'd just like to remember some of the people that have done this in the past. Mitzi Parr had done this one year. She's not with us no longer. George Hamas has done this several years. George is not with us any longer. So I just want to recognize some of the people in the past that have taken on this chore. Everything's set. We're going to have a great time. We'll have boat rides. There'll be games and things for everybody to do to keep themselves occupied. So the weather, we couldn't ask for anything better if we had a choice on what temperature we wanted or anything else. But it's going to be just a gorgeous day, and I want everybody to come and stay and have a good time. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Supervisor Sobranek and Supervisor Benrud.
Yes, I want to just thank Tara and her husband and family helping Jerry and I last night doing the tables and getting the pop all iced and the other beverage, big beverage, all iced up. And also, we're going to have music, so it should be a great day, and I'll see you all there. Thank you.
Thanks to both of you for all the work that you put into organizing it, and for Clerk Jenny Denkmeyer for the work their office has done as well. It should be a good time. But first, we have an agenda to complete. Just a quick update. The passage of the concealed carry law by the state legislature will mean that La Crosse County, along with all counties and lots of other organizations and businesses and so forth, need to create new policies about concealed carry issues. And I have asked a work group to spend some time on that, so that we are ready with whatever ordinance changes, procedural changes that need to be accomplished before the November 1 implementation date of that. So in advance, my thanks to Supervisors Mettinger and Schrader and Burke for their willingness to serve on that work group, along with Mr. Taunt and Mr. Shepherd and Mr. Spiropoulos. So they will be working in the next couple of months to get us the recommendations as it relates to changes that we may need to make to our ordinances and procedures on that. So if you have any input or suggestions, those are the three supervisors you should be talking with. Jenny Denkmeyer, do you want to give us an update on redistricting, please?
Right now we have all the resolutions from the municipalities approving and creating their wards. Jeff Blushke has entered that into Weisler, so a new map that we forgot to bring down is created that shows all the ward breakdowns for the municipalities. Right now, we're looking at having a redistricting committee meeting on the 30th of this month at 3 o'clock, where they'll approve the final resolution and map. And we are tentatively planning a public hearing on September 12th that will coincide with the September planning meeting. We don't expect a lot of people to come, so we figure we can do them both on the same day. And then the final resolution will be passed on the 15th by the county board, or it'll be brought to the county board. So it's pretty much at that point.
Supervisor Bina.
I would suggest at that point, after we make final approval, that you distribute a map to each supervisor. Is that legally possible?
Of the entire county or of your supervisory district?
Of our district I was talking about, because our districts change considerably from one year to another, at least in some areas. So do we have to pay for that, or do we get one freebie from the county? Is that a conflict of interest?
I'll look into that. Otherwise, they'll be for sale for a dollar in our office.
Supervisor Doyle.
Well, I would just note that those are not your districts unless you're reelected in the spring.
Madam Chair.
Supervisor Friedland.
At the first round, we seemed to have a situation where we had a public hearing, and then we had a full board meeting several days later, and we were informed that if we wanted to make some changes based on the input that we had at the public hearing, that we couldn't because we were facing a deadline of just that day or the next day. I can't recall. Are we going to have a similar situation here? In other words, if we hear something on Monday night and it is enough, substantial enough, that we want to do something different on Thursday night, are we able to? When is the there's like 60 days after the city makes its decision, right? Or 60 or 90 days. When does that period of time run?
Well, it's 60 days after we've got the final resolution, which was the Village of Rockland on the 27th of July. So I think we have 60 days from that point. But I'm going to defer to Bill on what changes can really be made at this point.
There are really very few changes that you can make. You could tweak something in a district as long as it didn't affect any other district, because there is a case that where I think it was Rock County or somewhere down in the south part, after the first 60-day period, asked the municipalities, you know, they wanted to redo all of the districts, and that is not allowed. So you can't affect any other municipality. If some municipality would come in and within that ask you to make some slight changes, that's possible. But really, it is this process does not really allow for much to occur after we get those districts back from the municipalities.
Well, I understand that, but nevertheless, if there's something that we want to change, perhaps something minor even, are we going to have enough time to do that? Or would it be better to have a time schedule here that place the public hearing more than just 4 days before we do our final voting?
I think one of the issues is that the municipalities have done their work, and they also had public input into their process. So while I appreciate your concern, Supervisor Friedland, I'm thinking that the scope of issues is really very narrow that would cause us to want to make any change. But one way that we might handle this is that if the public hearing is in fact held on the 12th of September in advance of our planning meeting, that we would place on the agenda for the planning meeting a discussion of and potential action on the redistricting map, and that would allow us to get the public input from earlier on, make any changes if we need to, and we would at least have those days in between the discussion at the planning meeting and when we have to take a vote that, you know, on Thursday. Does that seem reasonable?
I think
to you,
so.
Okay. Yeah. Supervisor Doyle.
I guess question for Ginny. I know that La Crosse didn't like the numbers that we had come up with, but have we heard anything from any other municipality in terms of where there might be some conflict?
I didn't hear any have real issues. I know the town of Hamilton, it creates a lot of ballot styles for them because they were kind of done at the end and got a hodgepodge of things. But it's only a couple more ballot styles than what they've had now. So most municipalities who are good with it, I hadn't had anybody with complaints or issues.
Mr. O'Malley.
Back to the map question, just to remind everybody, one of the advantages to the change in the website we did for the board members is the goal will be to actually have you be able to access and the public be able to access your maps. So unlike the non-interactive map that you have now, or previously, the goal will be to actually have a link so people will be able to find out where they live, which district, so that will help you when you're campaigning if you're running for re-election and or directing people to that site. So you'll have less of a need for a printed map. So, again, stay tuned on that. Once you make that decision, the website should be more interactive for the public.
Supervisor Geary.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Bill, you weren't quite clear on that. If you would tweak a district a block, then that's going to change the wards that the city or the some municipality in the county already approved. If that's possible to do, somehow, kind of on Maureen's question, how do you do it, or that information would have to get out ahead of time, because I don't understand how you could move a line without changing a ward.
And that's, I guess my point is, you really can't change much of anything, frankly. Well, conceivably you could, but it can't affect any other municipality. If the city of Onalaska wanted something different and it affected town of Campbell or, one of the other, you can't do that, because you can't go back and ask another municipality to now take some different lines and redo what they've already provided to you. So that is not prohibited by this public hearing and final approval process. That's why, this process really gets pretty set in concrete early on. And, we tried to make that clear to everyone, but it gets very inflexible the closer that you get to final approval.
You were talking about a municipality affecting another municipality. On Marines, what if it was the city of La Crosse just affecting things in the city of La Crosse and nothing outside the city of La Crosse? How is that done?
Well, I mean, they've given you their plan, and assuming that it provides us with the necessary wards that provides the districts that we need in the city of La Crosse, I don't know that they would come in and tell you something different at this point. I mean, because then it would have to go back through their legislative process, and that would cause all kinds of problems. So basically, you're not going to make any changes. That's really what's going to happen, frankly.
And keep in mind, each municipality has approved the maps already. Supervisor Cruz.
Thank you. Theoretically, though, if two municipalities agreed to make some changes on a contiguous border, could those mutually agreed upon changes be okayed?
It sounds simple, but usually what happens is a ripple effect, and Jeff could probably give you more detail, but one little change in one municipality affects a whole bunch of things. So, frankly, I don't think that's possible.
So swapping would not be allowed.
I don't think that that would work.
But we like the idea. Supervisor Mock.
Is it a legal thing to call this a public hearing? Because in a way, it's an informational meeting.
Statutes require a public hearing. That's by statute. So it is a public hearing.
So what's the description of a public hearing?
Notice is published. The public is allowed to come in and speak. Anyone can speak about the plan.
Yeah. Okay. Because I think a public hearing makes you feel as though you have some power to make a change. But apparently, if statutes say it has to be called a public hearing, I guess that's what it's going to be. But in a way, it's really an informational meeting to get us better informed.
Supervisor Cotter.
Thank you. Given that we've been talking about some hypotheticals, and this one is not a minor one, but would it be possible for the 13 district plan that was developed by the city that was brought forward at the tacit public hearing to be swapped for the 13 district county plan? And if that were the case, I'm pretty sure that there'd be a good element of support from the city to support that change.
The city has approved their ward plan. A resolution? The council already passed the ward plan, right?
So a resolution was already passed approving what was...
I know, but resolutions can be reconsidered. And what I'm saying is that the only reason that, or at least the most significant reason that the city went to 17 is because the communities of interest were not addressed in the county plan.
If I could just try to respond. It seems to me that that's a city issue, not a county issue. I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure where you are in the process. I did have a brief conversation with your city clerk. Apparently, you've already reconsidered that once. I don't think if you're going by Robert's rules, you can reconsider that twice. So that's a problem. So, but that's really a city issue. But as far as the county is concerned, within that 60 days, you have to provide us with a plan, and apparently you've done that. You know, that's the plan that this board has to react to. You know, that is the official action of the council within the time period that is allowed for cities to act. You've got you had 60 days. You've used the 60 days. I guess what you've provided to the county is what it is.
Well, I'm not going to prolong the discussion, but I think it certainly is a city and a county issue. And to say that it's only in the city's best interest, we made our best efforts to follow the rules. And all I'm asking is that given the circumstances, which I think all of us would agree, and many of the people sitting in this room didn't realize what they were voting on, the night that we voted on the county 13 plan, because several of them have talked to me since. And my question was just very simply, would there be any possible way that it could be considered brought back here at the request of the city if the city requested to do so?
And the answer is...
Not within the statutes, because the 60 days has passed. Yeah, I mean,
wow.
You know, if you're following Wisconsin law on the redistricting process, you had 60 days to do that. You provided us with something
Don't
in 60
make us
days.
The bad
that
guys.
Period has passed. I you know, that is frankly the redistricting law. I can't speculate it, you know, something beyond that. But that's really what the law is.
And as to the issue of being, of taking votes that anyone in this group feels unprepared to take, we have a number of procedural tools available to us. And I'm saying from this seat today, from while I am in this seat, we should avail ourselves of those tools. But to, after the fact, be disappointed or... continue to raise concerns about taking a vote in the past that we weren't prepared for or didn't understand, that responsibility is shared by all 35 of us in this room. And I would encourage us to make sure that when you cast your vote, you feel prepared to cast that vote. And if you aren't, then let's stop and use those procedural tools that we have to make sure that we are able to take informed votes. And that is my goal from this seat in this room, as long as I'm sitting in this seat. So I hope that we don't have this issue come up again, because I'm sure it feels very uncomfortable, but there are lots of ways to make sure that everybody is taking informed votes, including starting with being prepared to take those votes. And what we have in front of us now on redistricting is a pretty narrow scope of options. And that's the way that it is. Jeff, anybody else have anything else on redistricting? Jeff, you're up next for another, I'm sure, non-controversial issue, which is the zoning ordinance update.
Thank you. The Planning Resources and Development Committee has been working on the complete rewrite of our zoning code since the comprehensive plan was completed in 2008. I have a handout that was in your packet. It's labeled Update on Current Zoning Ordinance Draft that I'm going to discuss real quickly here. So if you don't have it, I'll cover all the 7 points. Number one, the committee has approved a change to the rural residential district, which would change the conditional use process for additional animal units with a 45 to 60 day review and a significant fee. To the staff, we would end up reviewing this process with no fees, and we would entertain this process in probably about a 1 to 5 day process, depending on who's in the office, because we're going to use the services of land conservation as well. In the table that happens to be in the proposed ordinance, we have the number of animal units that would be allowed without a conditional use process or this review. And this is for parcels up to 35 acres. If you look at that chart, it would indicate that for a certain acreage size, you could have one animal unit. If somebody wanted to have two or three, they could apply for this administrative review. We would take a look at the lot layout, the slopes, what's next to it, because there's certain subdivisions that might end up being right next to this, where the number of animal units might not be very appealing to the adjacent neighbors. So that's one change that was made. Number two, temporary structures. The committee approved to amend the zoning ordinance, and it has the section there. A zoning occupancy is not required and will not be required for accessory buildings 100 square feet or less. All accessory buildings shall still meet the requirements found in our table. And that is setback from the highway, side yard setbacks, and the rear yard setback. They still have to comply with those. Number three is kind of a house cleaning thing. This is the highway setback and vision clearance. We've always had railroad right-of-ways require a setback as well. We missed putting that back in. Number four, the committee approved for staff to propose language which might require easements to include public hearings for approval of said easement. Further action would be necessary at the countywide zoning ordinance public hearing. What is happening here, supervisors, is with the gas tax that was introduced by the legislature back in the 50s, a lot of municipalities received revenues based on the maintenance. The county does as well, based on the mileage of road in a community. Since those aids have been dropping, the municipalities do not want to acquire or receive any additional road right-of-ways. So what is happening, easements is becoming the norm. And what I mean by an easement is somebody, you as a property owner, would give me the right to travel over the top of your property to get to my property. And the committee has been very good at requiring maintenance agreements, but we still have a lot of easements out there that don't have these on, these agreements. So what is happening, the property will sell maybe 5-10 years from now. The people don't understand the agreement that was between not only everybody that's on that easement, but the owner, the underlying owner of that. And even though there's agreement, nobody wants to enforce the agreement. So it creates a bunch of problems over maintenance. There's a lot of safety issues because children have the bus. There's no public service that's allowed on that. Even the mail has to be delivered to the outside of the town road or county road. So the kids even have to walk this entire length of the easement to get on the bus. So there's a lot of issues that are popping up over these easements. And what is happening, the neighbors don't know that these easements are being created. So sometimes it ends up creating an issue. So this language is going to be something that might be a little bit tough to pound out, but we'll do it. Number five, the committee approved a countywide public hearing. This is going to be at the committee's September meeting. The September meeting is actually August 29th. That's in about 2 weeks. The scheduling for this is going to be at 1:30 in the afternoon. That might not be the most advantageous time, but that happens to be a very, very busy day for the Planning, Resources, and Development Committee. as part of the ordinance, we have taken out the sign portion of the ordinance. That's been deleted because there's another sign ordinance that's being proposed. This could fall under the zoning ordinance at some time if it's put back in. We're looking at a possible meeting at noon on the 29th, just to cover the sign portion. In relation to item number five, this is something that the committee has also approved. After the public hearing, we would be looking at taking this back to the county board for approval in October at our October 3rd meeting. And after it's approved, the committee is looking at allowing the towns a 12-month review period of their actual zoning map. And this is something that the towns wanted. They didn't want to be forced into this, trying to look at the different zoning on the parcels when we get into the actual flipping from one zoning district to another. So we want the towns to be highly involved because they have to buy in on this and they're part of the public hearing process. Number six, the committee approved to add language to the exclusive ag district to require deed restrictions with residential uses within the base farm. That's our way of tracking these residential uses. And then number seven, the committee approved the language to remove the conversion fees that have been required in the past. Whenever somebody wants to rezone something out of the exclusive agricultural district or transitional ag district to some other district, those fees have been taken away at the state level, so we're taking them out of our ordinance. So the proposed schedule, I touched on that just a little bit. The public hearing is August 29th. That's going to be the big meeting, with the first and second readings and the proposed published dates to follow. So if there's any questions, I would answer those.
Supervisor Doyle.
A couple things. First of all, a question on number one. Is there any appeal from the decision of the staff review?
The Board of Adjustment is the appeal process that's in our zoning ordinance right now.
So it would go to the Board of Adjustment?
Yes.
Okay. Secondly, I'm glad that you've extended the time frame out a little bit, but I do have a concern leading up to the public hearing. What effort has been made or will be made to get the word out about these changes? People that I'm talking to out in the community are still mad. They don't know about these changes. Whether these will make them less mad, I don't know. But I'm wondering if any thought had been given to some sort of publicity, maybe even a guest editorial and an article in the weeklies or something, because I think you're going to have a lot of mad people with two respects. One, thinking that we're still ramming through what they had heard at their local meetings. And secondly, I'm not sure they're going to be happy about an afternoon public hearing either. I think we're going to get some flack on that.
Well, as policymakers, we're looking for direction from the county board. We will do anything within the budget guidelines that we have. Certainly we could do some press releases, something like that. We've already taken this to each one of the local town boards. We've gotten very good input from them, but I don't know how to respond to that. You know, we've been working on this since 2008. This is not a surprise and should not be a surprise. The ordinance has been on the front page of the county's website. It's on our zoning department's page as well. The towns have been given two discs. I mean, outside of holding cheese and crackers and everything, we just can't get people to come to the meetings.
Have these changes been publicized? That's my question.
No.
Okay, that's
Are in the current ordinance, though.
Okay, but I'm not sure people understand that. And
okay.
I'm not talking about town board members. I'm talking about Joe and Sue down the road from each of us that are saying, what's going on here? People who are not necessarily in the loop.
Okay. Well, I would entertain any kind of comments, you know, from the county board here for a recommendation, because we're following the letter of the law right now, the things that we are required to do. So you guys are asking me for something over and above that, and I will do anything that you guys ask.
Supervisor Wood.
I mean, not everybody gets the paper either. I mean, you know, not everybody listens to the radio. So we could, and I'm not criticizing the comment, but we could spend $1,000 and not contact anybody.
Well, maybe let's come back to this as we're thinking about it, hear what other comments we have, and then see if there's a list of suggestions for ways to promote and publicize. Supervisor Wood.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is a rural residential district known as anything else on our zoning?
The rural residential district is the current agricultural district A.
Thank you. That's what I want.
Okay.
Supervisor Schrader.
Thank you. Supervisor Doyle touched on what I was going to say. So you've had all your meetings with the towns now?
Yes, sir.
And
this is where a lot of the comments came from that we're dealing with here now, outside of number 7 that deals with the conversion fees.
Okay. At those meetings, were there a lot of the general public at those meetings?
I would say from the 12 town meetings, there's probably 120 people attended.
Total.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think Mr. Doyle exactly right that, you know, the general public isn't getting the information that's here, and all of a sudden it's going to be just like when we did our comp plan.
Mm-hmm. Well, if
it's
I go
surprised everybody.
Okay, Supervisor Schrader, if I go back to number 5, the comment that we've got on the update there, this is probably the big one that will answer probably 95% of the residents' questions. It's going to be happening in this 12-month period, because once the zoning districts become effective, the towns are going to be the workhorse on looking at the individual parcels. And I'm going to go back to Supervisor Wood, because the question that's going to pop up, because most of the residential out in the county right now is Agricultural District A, all right? And the flip is going to be to rural residential. And a lot of them aren't going to know what that really means. What else can we do with that? That's going to be the questions that are going to end up popping up. They're still going to be coming in for permits for their temporary structures and stuff like that. And if they fall within that 100 square feet or less, we're going to tell them, no, you don't have to get a permit. They're going to be happy because there's not going to be a charge. These are the kind of questions that are going to end up popping up. It's not going to be the questions about, well, I've got commercial, I'm going to stay commercial. Those aren't going to be the questions. The questions that are going to pop up are probably in the egg A to rural residential flip, because the the agricultural district A right now has been a district that has worked for 50 some years, but it allows too much to happen. You can have a single-family residence. You can have a duplex. You can have a threeplex. You can have an eightplex if you have the number of square footage that's allowed. The municipalities have consistently told us, we don't want multifamily dwellings out in the country. It's not a place for that. So we have created districts that will it's the truth in advertising. Somebody comes to a public hearing, they're going to take their property to a residential B or residential C district. The neighbors are going to know that it's going to be a duplex or multifamily. In residential district A, this can happen at any point in time. So the questions that we've been hearing is, we're going to lose everything that we could do in the residential A district. There are going to be those factors. You're not going to be able to have the duplex unless you get a rezone, but we're going to support that. We're going to support that because that's what you had. So during that public hearing process, this is what we're going to call an upzoning. It's a higher use than you're allowed in the rural residential district. So if you can prove that this is a real good spot for a multifamily use, the committee's going to go along with it because you had that to start out with. Not everybody's going to want that. People are going to want to be protected with rural res where you can't have that in your neighborhood. So these are the kind of questions that are going to pop up. I don't think there's anybody that's going to have issues with the new district that they're going to be in. The Ag A to rural residential is going to be the only questions that are going to pop up. These other questions that are on this sheet are basically house cleaning as far as we're concerned.
You still have the floor, Supervisor Schrader.
Yeah. When you were speaking of the easements, Jeff, is that why is there no public access on easements? Is that a state law? What's the deal with that?
No. The counties don't, there's some counties that don't allow easements, okay? In our zoning ordinance, our definition right now of a lot, that's something that everybody has to have in order to build on. And it has to be sufficient size to allow side yard setbacks, septic systems, those kinds of things. But it goes on to say that you have to have an approved access, or you have to have frontage on a town road, state road, or federal highway. So you have to have frontage. You have to have access. The banks won't even give you a mortgage if you don't have access. So the approved access is an easement. And our ordinance right now says if it's going to be an easement for one house, let's say the highway is down this little hallway right here, but you're going to build back by that sign, and you don't want to build a town road all the way back to that sign, you're going to get an easement from the property owner that you're buying that land from. The town right now, the town, without a public hearing, approves the access from this road to get to that house. In our zoning ordinance, we indicate that as soon as the second home is introduced on this easement, the town and the county both have to give approval. We hold a hearing on that. That's part of the business portion of our meeting, okay? But there's no criteria. There is in the statutes that says our committee, the Planning Resources and Development Committee, can say as soon as that second home is approved, it should be a town road. Otherwise, we're not going to approve that lot that's going to be attached to that easement, because that's not the way we want to see development in this county. That lot should be out here on this frontage. That's the issue that we're talking about as far as the easement goes. But there's no public hearing process that we know of at the town level for that first house. The public doesn't, the people surrounding this doesn't, they don't know about this easement and what else that could bring.
So the parameters of that could be changed.
Yes, sir.
Supervisor, yeah, go ahead, Charlie.
I just want to speak really briefly on
the... Briefly, did you say?
Really briefly, I said. On the public informational meetings that we held at the towns. I went to every town, held a public informational meeting that was scheduled by the town, whether it was at their planning commission or their town board. And Jeff's right, there was about 120. Some of them had three. Some of them had 50 that came. Town of Shelby sent out, I think, somewhere around 2,500 cards to their residents to invite them. And there was, I think there was 100 chairs in the fire department and 50 of them were full. So they had really good attendance at the town of Shelby. These updates were given at the town of Shelby meeting because they happened before that town of Shelby meeting, but they were not given at any of the other public meetings because they didn't happen before them. We did, as soon as they were done, send them out to the town board members of each town so that they got these adjustments, but we have not publicized them. you know, one of the things we could do is we could send cards out. I'll talk a little bit about that process of Shelby sending cards out. As a staff, I'm guessing we got between 100 and 150 phone calls from those cards. What does this mean? And the first probably 75 phone calls we got before we even knew the town had sent the cards out. So we didn't even know what the cards meant. But we figured it out, and as a staff, we had really good conversations with those residents who had questions about how does this affect me. And we've had conversations with a number of residents that have called about the ordinance. And almost without exception, the residents that are reasonable, that are listening, that understand their choices in the ordinance, go away from the phone call happy. If they're anti-government and they don't want the county to have a zoning ordinance, of course they're not going to go away from that phone call happy. But what we've done with the ordinance is made choices for people, and I think these amendments have even increased their choices in the zoning ordinance. So hopefully with the public hearing process, we'll get there and we'll make the changes we need. And then the 12-month period that the towns will have, I've offered to go to any town meetings they hold in that 12-month period to try and help them make good decisions with the public informational meetings that they'll need to do in that 12-month process.
We have three more supervisors who have questions. My intent is to come back to this issue of publicity and promotion, so keep thinking about your ideas and suggestions for that. But in the meantime, Supervisor Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Jeff, you go back to that hour meeting we're going to have on the signs. You kind of ease through that, and I'm not sure the supervisors understand what it is and what we're going to try to accomplish in that hour, hour and a half, whatever.
Okay. Yesterday we had our agenda setting meeting, and what we always try and do is try to figure out how much time we're going to need for each one of the topics. Originally we had included the discussion and some kind of review and input from the stakeholders on this, and it was recommended that we hold this at a separate time from the business portion of the Planning Resources and Development Committee. So it was recommended from noon to 1, a lunch meeting. And if that doesn't end up working, we can move that maybe up on the agenda and have it the first item under the business portion at 3:30. That would, because the proponents of the sign ordinance have indicated they want to talk about this for an hour, and we probably need at least that. That would give us a half an hour, 4:30 to 5, to get rid of the other business portion, and that looks like it's going to end up being about an hour and a half worth of business. So we could hold this at another time, but we're trying to move this thing along too, so it's... It's unfortunate we have to try and squeeze 200 pounds of work into a 100-pound day.
I'm all in favor of moving it along. What are they going to have to look at?
Supervisor Friedland has given us some drafts. It's before Corporation Council now. Assistant Corporation Counsel Dave Lang has been working vehemently on this. He's trying to fit it in too, so we understand that he is going to have something for us for the 29th.
Okay.
But it won't come out until the middle of next week.
Is that the sign ordinance changes and proposal by Supervisor Friedland is in Dave Lang's hands? The expectation is that a final draft, so to speak, of that version will be available for everyone next week, particularly when we know what the schedule is. But the concept is that you'll have it in your hands. Advocates on both sides of the issues will have that draft to be able to react to. We need to have that in everybody's hands
before the meeting.
Well before the meeting. It can't be handed out that day,
right,
even though we're not expecting votes whatever day that ends up being. We're trying to fit all this in together.
Okay. It's my interest just to move it along as best we can. Right.
And just to finish answering your question, the Planning Resources and Development Committee is a little unique because we have a 10-day requirement for our notice, our public meeting notice, when it goes out. Most committee meetings, you can get out the agenda the week prior or something like that. So what we were going to try and do is get everything out by this Friday. Well, that's not going to happen for this sign ordinance discussion. It's going to be on a separate pink sheet. And that's what Mr. O'Malley has indicated. It won't come out with your packets on this Friday with everything else that's in it. It'll be a separate pink sheet. So I'm just letting everybody know, put it on your agenda. And if you guys want, we can discuss that after the meeting. The P&R R&D committee can get together and see if that works for it. Because we have to have a quorum, too.
Okay. Just wanted to get the information on the floor.
Thank you.
Supervisor Bina.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I start out with one question. Now I got two. Just a point I wanted to make is that easements aren't necessarily from a road to a house or a series of houses. They could be over land like I have on my farm. My grandfather put an easement on that 80 to 90 years ago, allowing a dirt road plus access to a land behind my land, which is all one part of the same farm. So easements can vary all over the place. They're not necessarily going to be put into a town road. but they give you access to another property. So that's the only point I wanted to make there. In the regards to the other thing that I'm still concerned about, and I made a couple of calls already, and I have some more to make before we get to our meeting, is that the farmers who are coming on the scene nowadays are small farmers, or they aren't considered farmers because they have less than 35 acres. And Steve Doyle made a good point a little bit ago, because I think Steve maybe is in that same situation, because he has a number of animals on his little plot, which is under 35 acres. And my concern is that there are a lot of kids showing at fairs nowadays, and the parents are buying small plots of land out in the out county. They aren't considered a farmer necessarily, unless they're exclusive ag, which is highly unlikely, but it could be. My concern is that we at the fair, and I sat on the fair board ever since Jan Kyle died a number of years ago, our concern is that we have more sheep and goat farmers in our county and horse farmers also. And a lot of these people are on less than just small acreage. And I don't know if they're affected or not. I found two that were affected because they have more animals than what we're allowing in our statistics now. And I still have a lot of names to go, and I will make those calls. But my concern is that if you buy 10 acres or 12 or 15 or 20 acres and you start raising some animals, these are the people who haven't been at our public hearing because they don't know they're going to be affected. And my concern is that I don't know how to get to these people unless you go through the 4-H Club, which could be a possibility, and send notices out through all the kids and the parents in 4-H Club who show the animals at the fair.
Because Supervisor Bina, is this part of the publicity issue that you're...
I'm not sure.
I haven't heard a question yet. That's
what
I'm asking.
These are people like the Steve Doyles,
right,
who have less acres and any number
and they
of
don't,
animals.
They maybe don't know about it.
Because you're only allowed three animals on that property.
Right,
and if they're in violation and they don't know about this change, they're going to be mad because it's going to cost them $350 to change.
So this is part of that
yes,
publicity and the notification.
So
we have one more speaker before we come back to this issue. I promise that we will.
So that's my
to come
concern
up with a plan
right now.
Thank you. Supervisor Pedretti.
Thank you. I think Jeff hit it on the head. You can publicize this. We have been working on this for 2 years. It has been at the town level. We have done due diligence, but if somebody has an idea, by all means. My concern is we send out postcards. Our office, the zoning staff, is going to spend all of their time answering calls versus having people show up at the public hearing and hearing it one time instead of our staff having to tell people who call over and over and over the same issue. We've had it at the town level. We had great turnout at the town of Holland. We did as much publicity as we could. It's kind of like when the school board has a referendum and 13% of the people show up to vote on it, and then the tax bill comes out and everybody comes in the hall and complains about the taxes. It's the same issue. No one is going to know what this is going to do until it actually takes effect. So the one-year period is absolutely what we need. I don't know how else you're going to get people to hear about this. You can hit yourself against a brick wall. It's not until it takes effect that people are going to understand how this is going to work.
So before we finalize our promotion plan or our public relations plan, Supervisor Geary, I think, has one more question.
Just a comment on the issue, how to get the information out best. You should work with the individual townships. They should know how to get the information to their constituents. Sticking a letter to the editor when it has no effect on the people who live in the city of La Crosse or Onalaska or Holman or West Salem, when the majority of the county, it may even confuse those people like it may have an effect on them. The individual townships should know how to get information to the people that they represent.
Mm-hmm.
Just an answer to that. The towns do send out, some towns send out a yearly newsletter, and that's usually right after the first of the year, indicating if there's any legislation changes, dog licenses, all those kinds of things. Some send out two, some send out quarterly. Perfect opportunity. We could send it out with our tax bills, we could send a notice, or the town could stick it in their yearly newsletter. this is your opportunity to come to the next 12 meetings that we have. You know, take a look at the map. If you have any questions, we'll talk to you. If we can't answer the question, we'll send you packing back downtown.
Mm-hmm. Supervisor Richmond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think what we need to do, Jeff, though, is have a public hearing, but it needs to be in the evening. 1:30 in the afternoon for whomever would like to be there, it needs to be in the evening.
And so I agree. I'm thinking if we don't get enough people, if the committee determines that, or we get an overflow and we have to cut it off and pick another date, it will probably be on a day when the committee doesn't have its normal meeting date.
What I'm hearing several people say is that we should, in fact, schedule an evening public hearing. If you want it to be in addition to the 1:30, that's fine. But I think we should be notifying folks that we are, in fact, having an evening public hearing. And I don't know that we have to pick that time and date now, but know that staff will work with committee members to find a suitable time and place to be able to do that.
Okay.
So if you want to stick with the 1:30, I think that's the, you know, that's your call. But I'm hearing several people say that we expect to have an evening public hearing on this.
Okay.
Supervisor Flood.
Thank you. My suggestion is, yes, schedule an evening hearing. However, you know, just to be complete and for you to be able to say, people to be able to say, well, you can, it'll be in the paper, I would simply send out a press release, which is free, you know. Mm-hmm. It all it costs you is the time to write it, to every paper in the county, title it Zoning Interest for Rural Residents, so people's eyes maybe would be attracted mm-hmm. to that, and just do a very simple press release saying what changes, the important changes, and when the public meetings are. It won't cost you anything.
Mm-hmm. Supervisor Doyle.
Thank you. Are we on the issue of publicity at this
yes,
point?
Yes, we are.
Okay,
We've
thank you.
Established ourselves on that path, yes.
That sounds good. Despite what Mr. Bina says, this isn't really all about me. I'm not chair anymore, so it's not all about me. What this is about is zoning has worked well in La Crosse County, and it has worked well because everybody outside the urbanized areas participates. If we start having towns drop out, then it's chaos. And that's what I'm really concerned about preventing is you get a bunch of people in one of the towns that go to their town board and say, oh, my God, look what the county's trying to do to us. Because that's what I've heard. And Mr. Bean is right. It's the 4-H'ers and it's the horse people that I'm hearing from that are very, very concerned about what's going on here. It's the goat and the sheep people. He's right in that respect. I was out at the fair the other day.
No alpaca people?
Alpaca people, and there's another one in the room with me here today. alpaca people are fine. I haven't heard any complaints from them. But I am hearing concerns about people that are saying, you know, 4-H is a great opportunity for kids, and if somebody has 15 acres and has a couple of goats on it, you know, we don't want to make that illegal. And we're also hearing, well, I have, you know, 5 horses today, but I might have 10 sometimes, and if on the day of the flip I only have 5, does that mean I can't go to 10? It's just the I don't want to call it misinformation, maybe lack of information that they have received. And so I'm not saying I'm opposed to what we're doing. I think it's great what we're doing. I just don't want to have it get to the point where because people aren't aware of the details and that it's not this Armageddon that's going to happen to them, that now they're going to go run into their town board and say, we got to stop this. I like the idea of the editorial. I suggested it. I guess I should like it. And despite what Mr. Geary may think, people in Out County do read. You know, we get the paper in the town of Onalaska, and, you know, we do pay attention to what's in there. So I think a guest editorial from perhaps Jeff or Charlie might be useful. I like the idea of going to the towns and saying, how about in your newsletter insert this, and maybe even we encourage them to do a newsletter earlier than they might otherwise so that word gets out there. My big concern is just getting it out before we start having towns bolt. That's all I'm trying to accomplish by my comments here this morning.
And there definitely seems to be consensus around this issue. And in the interest of time, I'm going to encourage others who have specific suggestions for how the how we might accomplish this public awareness in addition to changing or adding a public hearing in the evening and using the media to get out our message. If you have other suggestions, and I'm sorry, newsletters and town notifications, if you have other specific suggestions that you talk to Jeff or Charlie about them, Planning Resources and Development Committee will continue to deal with this. And again, unless somebody has a specific suggestion beyond that, I'm going to ask us to move along. Mr. O'Malley also has a question about procedure for the committee.
I do have a specific suggestion, and whether it be only the chair and vice chair of PRD committee or the entire PRD committee at the end of this meeting to just confirm our schedule for the 29th. I will ask Jeff to bring along his draft agenda. We've tried to do this by phone. This is not to discuss any policy issues. It's to make sure that the calendar for that day and whether or not we continue with the 1:30 public hearing. I'm concerned that we've gotten pushback on each one of these things, and I think staff's going to go tooling off in one direction and not satisfy somebody on that committee. Usually our agenda prep meetings for other committees involve the chairs or the members of the committee, so I'm suggesting that just for setting that agenda that we get clear direction from folks, and I'm suggesting immediately after this county board meeting that at least the chair and vice chair and the rest of the members meet over here and just go through that list so that we get clear direction. We've tried to adjust to all the things from the regular set of business, the public hearing, and whether or not that continues at that date, the regular public hearing that we have, as well as the sign ordinance. There is a great deal to try to fit into that 29th, and I'm concerned whatever decision that Jeff and I make is not going to satisfy what the committee wants to be able to accomplish that day, as well as your availability. So I think, Jeff, if you just make a copy of what we've got so far as a handout for those folks, and I know we haven't posted that as a meeting, but I think we have to do something to get clear direction. So.
The last time you had a brief opportunity to do it was here's your second brief opportunity.
Who's the one person that has attended most of the public informational meetings, and that's Don. You've been at how many? Well, Maureen too. And understanding this issue about animal units in the rural residential district, do you got it? Do you understand it? Okay, 9.2 acres. How many animal units are they allowed on 9.2 acres?
Supervisor Bean, will you use your microphone, please, during this interrogation that you're undergoing?
I'm guilty.
Yeah, brief interrogation that you're undergoing.
The point is we could
one,
hold...
1, 2, and 3 on up to 30.
Right.
So, therefore, you know, I'm sure there... I know one horse farmer that got 5 horses on a small, small parcel, and he don't... And I'm going to stop and talk to him on the way home.
And he can continue that. He can continue that, Don. But the point is Don's been at how many meetings, and it's obvious by some of his comments that he doesn't know exactly how.
No, I know exactly. But
then why is it a problem for them? It's already done. How can we have another public hearing?
Can I interrogate?
Yeah, I'm going to end both interrogations. Any other comments from county board supervisors? It's a complex issue, I think was Charlie's point, but
let's move along.
Perhaps it was more than that. And to this issue of the planning resources and development somehow huddling afterward, I'm uncomfortable with that, quite frankly, because it's not noticed. So before we end this meeting, Supervisor Meyer or Pedretti, you may want to ask for a recess so that you can briefly do that and still be okay in doing it. But
okay.
I don't want to create open meetings violations on picnic day or any other day for that matter. So we may just need to talk to the chair and the vice chair at some other point. But I don't think we want to be scheduling a meeting during a meeting, inside a meeting. Wow. Supervisor conference reports. Are there any supervisor conference reports? It's moving right along to the consent agenda. Moved by Supervisor Plesha, seconded by Supervisor Cruz. Any discussion on the consent agenda? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Carries unanimously. Item 8.4, Supervisor Meyer from Planning Resources and Development.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We have item 8-4, conditional use permit number 832, filed by Nathan Ward and Burrell Consulting Agents for U.S. Cellular, acting on behalf of Leo and Ruth Lease to construct a 195-foot self-supporting communications tower zoned in exclusive agriculture district in the town of Washington. This was approved by the PRD committee 3-2. I'd move for your approval, and I'd like to hold the floor after that.
Moved by Supervisor Meyer, seconded by Supervisor Manti. You have the floor again, Supervisor Meyer.
You've all received a lot of correspondence on this probably yesterday or the day before, and there's a lot of information in there, and some of it's true and some of it's not. At any rate, we have held two public hearings on this. And if you read over our minutes, you see I think we've covered it quite well, and that was a difficult vote for a lot of people, but we did approve it. So I would like to call on Jeff Blusky to kind of fill in the holes here and make everybody aware of just what's happened.
I'm also going to ask that Mr. Shepard be heard maybe first, since Jeff didn't even hear that we wanted him to come up because he's being distracted over there. And just have Mr. Shepard clarify for us what our choices are today before we take this vote. So, Mr. Shepard, and then Jeff, if you would come up when Bill's done, please.
What I'd like to do just briefly is clarify what the law is regarding telecommunications facilities. I think that there has been some information that's out there that isn't taken into account what the law is, and I think you should know that before you make any decisions. Telecommunications goes and has been obviously a fast-growing area. As we see, everybody's got a cell phone. In 1966, the Telecommunications Act was passed by the federal government and signed by President Clinton, and that was really the first major overhaul of the law in 62 years. And as far as state and local governments are concerned, one of the significant issues in that federal law was a preemption provision, and it provides that the Federal Communications, FCC, by this law preempts local and state legal requirements that acted as a barrier to entry into the provision of both interstate and intrastate telecommunications services. One of the significant provisions of the federal law is in Section 704, and I'll just read, it's a relatively short provision. This is in regard to facility siting, which is really the issue that you'll have to decide today. It says that any decision by a state or local government or instrumentality thereof to deny a request to place, construct, or modify personal wireless service facilities shall be in writing and supported by substantial evidence contained in a written record. So it's substantial evidence contained in a written record. Subsequent to the passage of that federal law in 1996, the county board passed its own ordinance, and it's entitled in Chapter 28 of our county ordinances, Telecommunications Facilities. As a part of that ordinance, it set forth the purpose of the ordinance, and one of the stated purposes of the ordinance is to encourage managed development of these facilities, but under the constraints of our ordinance and federal law. And it also states that that this act that the county board passes to be consistent with the Federal Telecommunications Act of 1996. So it was recognized by this county board in 2002 when our ordinance was passed that telecommunications is an important service to our public. There is quite an extensive series of provisions in Chapter 28 of our ordinance, but relevant to this discussion is Section 28.06, which provides where areas where telecommunication facilities may be allowed or prohibited. And our ordinance says that telecommunications facilities may be allowed as a conditional use in the following zoning districts, subject to public hearing, review, and approval by the Planning Resources and Development Committee. And there is a list of districts. And as I understand from this particular application, that this is an exclusive agricultural district. And that is one of the districts that where placement of these facilities are permitted or allowed as a conditional use under 2806 sub 1 B. There is a lot of information in Chapter 28. The process in Chapter 17 on granting of conditional uses is referred to, so the procedures are similar. In Chapter 17, under the agriculturally related uses permitted in this kind of district, there is references to other uses that are permitted with a conditional use permit is a public utility. Public utility certainly can be a telecommunications facility such as is proposed in this application. The specific provisions that need to be looked at and adhered to are primarily the Chapter 28, but there is reference and connection back to Chapter 17. Now, the proposal that the committee has brought forward to you obviously grants approval. This board has a choice of like in any of these things, to approve or deny. But this board can only deny this application if there is substantial evidence contained in the written record. So I just provide that caution to you. So if there are any questions about
let's
about
get any
law,
questions
I'd
about
be happy to
Mr. Shepherd's
questions.
Comments. Supervisor Mettinger? Oh, Supervisor Sobranik.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for Jeff and the Corporate Counsel. An exclusive agricultural district's cell phone towers are not authorized by a conditional use permit. Is that correct?
Their cell phone towers. Just a second. The cell phone, I didn't read through all of the districts where they are permitted by a conditional use. Agricultural District A, Exclusive Agricultural District, Transitional Agricultural District, Agricultural District B, Commercial District A, Commercial District B, Commercial District C, Industrial District. All of those zoning districts can have cell phone towers in them, subject to a conditional use permit in the public hearing. So, I don't know if there are, Jeff can tell you if there are other agricultural districts. He's more familiar with all of those than I am, but I think that covers all the agricultural districts, doesn't it, Jeff?
Yes, it does.
So, it is a permitted use in agricultural districts, subject to conditional use and public hearing.
And the letters that we received, like from the attorneys, if we pass this, they're going to take court action, and they're saying that the court's going to overrule us.
If you notice in that opinion, there is never reference made to Chapter 28. Whether they knew or did not know about the particular chapter that this county board has passed in compliance with the Telecommunications Act of 1996, I don't know, but I can tell you that our ordinance is consistent with that federal act, and it is permitted by virtue of Chapter 28.
Thank you. And my next question is for Jeff. Jeff, back in 2002, I thought we passed a ordinance that the height limit was 175 feet.
No. We've got one tower that's 400 feet. There's no limit on what ordinance are you referring to?
I'm referring to the one on cell towers.
No. There's no height limit on that. Those are regulated with a conditional use permit. I can take a look at that.
I would ask if he would do that at your earliest convenience, but I'm pretty sure we passed ordinance back in 2002 with a 175-foot limit on cell towers, and here they're asking for 195.
So while Jeff works on that, are there any other questions for Mr. Shepherd first? Supervisor Cotter, was yours to to Mr. Shepherd? Okay, let's let Jeff tell us what he was going to, and then Supervisor Cotter, you'll be the first person to ask him a question.
Okay, to finish answering that question, and Corporation Counsel indicated that the attorney had referenced the wrong ordinance. The zoning ordinance, which is Chapter 17, under conditional use permits allowed in the exclusive agricultural district, it does allow cell towers, and that falls under the public utility section. The attorney was referring to the other agricultural districts, where it refers to them as microwave relay stations. Those are specific references in other districts. Under the exclusive agricultural district, it's a general comment about public utilities. If you look up public utility definition, it definitely includes cell towers. 93% of this county is zoned exclusive ag and transitional ag right now. You have to be able to get utilities out to the agricultural sections. So we would not make that mistake to the county board.
So what does the 175 limit? I thought...
Yeah, I'm still looking.
Does anybody else know the answer to this or have it at their fingertip? Sort of. No height limit.
There is none.
Well, it used to be.
No. Okay. Mr. Blesky, what did you want to tell us about this? Did you want to make some general comments about this agenda item or just respond to questions?
Just respond to questions.
Supervisor Cotter.
Thank you. My concern, which may or may not be necessary, is on point number two, where it says that the tower may be constructed and expanded in height by amendment of the conditional use permit. No light is required. Now, Bangor area could be on flight path, and why no light?
We've already checked that out.
Okay.
Yeah, and no light is required. If it was in the path, one would be.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. even the number of local private flyers, would it affect them?
One of our requirements in our telecommunications ordinance, and this is something that the consultant for any cell tower provider has to provide us information with, is if this tower is going to be within a half-mile radius of any helicopter port, 1 mile radius from any private airport or runway, and 3 mile radius from any public airport. Okay. And this is not. So therefore, it's not required.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We have an answer on the height issue for Mr. Shepherd. It's not just me saying it from the mic.
In answer to your question, Mr. Sobranek, about the height, Section 28.09, parent 4, provides that the height shall be limited to less than 200 feet unless the applicant can demonstrate to the satisfaction of the committee that a greater height is necessary to provide coverage. Mm-hmm. So it's 200 feet is the height, but it could be increased. See what has been provided in the decision of the committee. It's 195 feet, so it's within the allowable height.
Okay.
So now we're.
So
Go ahead, go ahead, Supervisor Sobranek.
Well, that's getting pretty close, 195 feet. That's pushing the limit. I think there is a more suitable location for this, and I'm going to support the my constituents on this, and I'm not going to support this.
Supervisor Pedretti.
Thank you. As you know, this is not an easy issue. This is the paperwork that our committee received on this issue. I have read through it not only twice, but some of it three times. This was not easy to judge. And then since the meeting, I've actually, hard to believe, read through the zoning due process handbook again. So it is, in the interest of being honest, I will be voting in favor of this, unlike on the committee level, because we have not, rereading all the information from the committee hearings only. That's all we can use when we base this on. There is no clear and convincing reason to deny. And if we do deny, we have to have a clear and convincing reason. And unfortunately, under the state, under the statutes we work with and under the ordinance we work with, that is the way I'm going to have to vote today. Thank you.
Supervisor Richmond.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question for Jeff. How many people had signed up as objectors to this plan?
We don't have anybody sign up as objectors, but the minutes indicate how many did.
Okay.
Let's see.
Just to clarify, well, you're asking legal objectors as in adjacent property owners?
Legal objectors.
Which is different than people who came to the hearing and spoke in opposition.
Okay.
Right? Is that your question, Supervisor
yes,
Richmond?
Okay.
For conditional use permits, there is no legal objector. It's not like a zoning ordinance where if you get over 50% of the perimeter signed in on a petition objecting, it would force the county board to a three-quarter vote. That doesn't apply to conditional use permits.
Mm-hmm. But you did have people attend the hearing that were opposed to it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
In the letters that we all received, there was another site that was proposed. It's possible we could turn this down and go to another site that would be in favor of that other site. But then they would have to come back in 12 months. Is that correct?
If it's on a different property, they can come back next month.
Okay.
Okay. The zoning ordinance indicates frequency for a piece of property. If a piece of property is turned down, that same piece or any other piece on that same piece of property can't come up for another year. Now, if the minutes are very clear that there were other sites that were discussed, and if I'm correct on this, the letters that came out after the public hearing are indicating another site has surfaced. The committee did hear about that site and why it was not picked. You could probably come up with six different sites. The consultant for the cell tower indicated that this was the best site for its customers. The committee had a bunch of maps to take a look at that are modeled based on where the tower is going to be and its height. If you take a look at that map, it kind of looks like your brain in different colors. But the frequency engineers that plot these maps based on this model indicate that the site that's up today for a conditional use permit was the best site because it represented where their customers were. The other sites that were looked at covered areas that this tower does not, but they indicated during the public hearing that's not where their customers are. So there's overlap in all of them. It's going to cover areas that one doesn't cover and another one's going to cover areas this one didn't cover. They indicated to the committee, and this is what the committee had before them, that they did take a look at these sites. This last site that did come up, I think the opponents to this site wanted an answer about this, and I'm thinking it's the Milsna site in the minutes. They did take a look at that site. They did a model on that site, and they said it was on class 1 and 2 soils, which this committee would have to turn down if that site was picked, because it has to be on class 3 soils or worse. This lease site beats that criteria. It's on soils grade 3 and 4. So the committee did hear all this data.
So the letters that we received from Erica Guiland and Mr. Ellison, how far away is that tower from their organic farming? That's a real big issue, and I know the city also has a lot of discussion on these cell phone towers.
If you take a look at the map on the back, okay, you'll see a square marked number one. There's a lot of number ones on there. That's the property owned by the lease family. Mm-hmm. Okay. If you take a look at the drawing just below that has all the contour information on it, that is actually where the tower is going to be on the lease property. Now, if you take a look at the north property line, which is I wish we could have this up on the screen there, but there's a dashed line, and it's kind of hard to read. It says, setback from the north property line, the tower. So that would be the property line along the north. Parcel 16 is the Guiland parcel, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And, oh boy, we had aerial photos and everything that we could have had up if we knew this question was going to come up. But
we're working on getting the map up on the screen.
Okay.
Are there other questions that you have that don't relate to the map, Supervisor Richmond? Well, I just want to comment. I think we need to take into consideration the letters that were sent and the effects on the organic farming, whether it is a hazardous issue, and I believe it is. I know there was one proposed at the McDonald's in the city of La Crosse on the north side of La Crosse, and we turned it down, being that there are health risks involved, whether U.S. Cellular or any other cell phone tower will, they would never agree to that, of course, but if anybody wants to, they can Google that and look that up on the hazards of cell phone towers. Thank you. Which map did you want to point?
That's the one that they have right there. That north line, and I'm going to use the laser right here. This line right here is the north line of parcel 1. That's the line toward parcel 17, which is owned by St. Joseph Construction. There's a quarry on that site. The property line adjacent to parcel 16 is off the map here. Okay. We have no scale, but I'm going to kind of guesstimate here that this is about 600 feet to that property line, and then the residence is down the hill. I'm going to say probably another 300 feet away. Okay.
Did that answer all your questions, Supervisor Richmond? Okay. Supervisor Hampson. Sorry about that. Supervisor Ferries.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As Don Meyer pointed out, this is going to be a tough vote for the subcommittees, and I'm sure it is going to be here. And it's not a vote, do you like cell phone towers or don't you like them? Do you like billboards or don't you like them? Nothing I'm going to say or do that's going to convince you anything different. But, I mean, we deal with this a lot in Onalaska, and I'm sure the city of La Crosse probably has a lot of issues with cell phone towers. We all want the service, but we don't want the towers. So a few of the things you got to look at. Is there health risks involved? Now, I have not seen any substantiated proof. I've heard a lot of theories and opinions. I've never, and I've dealt with this a lot, seen any substantial proof that there is a health risk to this. If there was, I don't think in the city of La Crosse, the U.S. Bank, our own city, La Crosse's City Hall, have cell phone towers. They have them. Now, unless it's a plot to get rid of all the bankers and politicians, and you know.
Is that a motion?
Yeah, second. Or our beautiful place up in Onalaska, Eagle Crest. Umpteen $1 million, lots of people up there. We have cell phone towers on there. It's not a tower, but they're receivers. So there is not any health risk involved that has been proven. Does it serve the public's needs? They certainly do. Every one of us have them on our hips or in our purse. And does it affect the least amount of people? Well, in a rural setting, yes. I got to say that. Should we tell U.S. Cellular how to run their business? You know, no, this is a better location for you. It's a very complex thing that I've learned, and I've only just got to the tip of the iceberg, but it's a very complex because a tower will pick up what they want their coverage, relay to another tower, and it's not just like putting one out there and it works independently. It's very, very complex. Two other committees have approved this already, not unanimously, but they have approved it. But the bottom line, you know, we're spending a lot of time on this, and I think we all expected to, but the bottom line on it, as Mr. Shepard touched on, and I've learned through the City of Onalaska, do we have a substantial evidence to turn this down? And rather than just somebody doesn't like it because it affects the neighborhood or whatever, we don't have evidence to prove that. So I think, yeah, they're threatening a lawsuit one way or another, but as I read or as I heard from Mr. Shepard, that there is very much law that says that we don't have if you don't have substantial evidence, you can't refuse them. And I'll be voting for this motion. Thank you.
Supervisor Burns.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First, I want to commend Supervisor Pedretti for all her efforts and work trying to understand this issue. I know she spent a lot of time on it, and I can't thank her enough for that. Just a couple points of clarification that Supervisor Richmond brought up regarding the adjacent property owners. Of the 12 adjacent property owners that weighed in on the issue, 10 were in favor of the proposal, 2 are not in favor of the proposal. So 83% of the adjacent property owners who weighed in on the issue were in favor of this. The second point Supervisor Richmond brought up, how far is it from the, how far is the cell phone tower, proposed cell phone tower structure from the property line of one of the opposing parties? It is 640 feet, according to the petitioner, Mr. Lease, 640 feet. So Mr. Bleschke's number would I would agree with. I guess what I want to just briefly mention is I support this 100%. One of the things that I think we need to understand is, and I think it was mentioned earlier, is there's been a tremendous amount of opportunity for public input in this process. And I wanted to ask, maybe I'll save my question. I might not need to ask it, but there have been 5 public meetings where citizens have been allowed to provide public input, either through a public meeting or an actual public hearing. The Town of Washington Planning Commission had a meeting on April 18th, 2011. It was introduced. Public comment was taken. The Town of Washington again had a Planning Commission meeting on June 29th. They had a public hearing. It was passed unanimously by the Planning Commission. Okay, passed unanimously. Number 3, the Town of Washington Town Board had a meeting on July 13th, and they passed it on a 2-1 vote. Public comment was allowed. With our body, the PR&D committee had a public hearing on July 7th, and it was tabled. And the PR&D committee had a public hearing on August 1st, where it was passed. Throughout this whole, I'm very confident that grassroots democracy is working, and I believe that it's clear from the citizens in Middle Ridge and in this part of rural La Crosse County that they want a cell phone. I know Mr. Bina probably has something to say about it, but I have a petition here with 73 signatures in favor of this proposal. Lastly, I just want to say one thing. I got an unsolicited call from Mr. Tom Fila, who is the chair of the Town of Washington Planning Commission. And he told me on the phone, he said, quote, the overwhelming majority of citizens who expressed their opinion through either the petition process or the public hearing process were in favor of this proposal. So I'm really confident this is based on what Mr. Bleschke has mentioned about this being the optimal location. I'm completely confident in his analysis. I'm confident that the public has had a chance to weigh in on the issue. And, I mean, there's so many other things I'd like to talk about, but I'm going to stop. But I really encourage all of you to consider this. Thank you.
Supervisor Doyle.
Just a quick question for Corporation Counsel. Bill, you talked about the language from the Telecommunications Act that required the substantial evidence. Is that language tracked in our ordinance also? And if so, where would that be?
I don't think that we specifically say that, but we what the what our ordinance does say is that it shall be consistent with the Federal Telecommunications Act of 1996. I know that that act is at least on one site that I went to is 128 pages long. So I think by that general statement in the purpose section, we can take a look at the Telecommunications Act. It is applicable to this situation, and to be consistent, I think you have to take into consideration what is required to turn something like this down.
Thank you.
Supervisor Meyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I agree with what Dan Ferris has had to say about it. He summed it up well. Jim Burns, the details you gave are great. I had a little different count. I had 10 in favor and 5 against, but they were not all adjacent to the land, but it was 10 and 5 that did testify, and then there was one that was he testified against it, but then he really said, I'm not against it. So it was really 10, 5, and 1. So one of my reasons, I didn't think there was anything substantial in here for us to disapprove this. I've heard both public hearings, and a lot of things that were said were possibilities that could happen, but they haven't and probably won't. So that was one of my reasons for supporting it. So I would encourage your support on this.
Supervisor Bina.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to get a couple of comments in because this is my district, and I've heard about this since I've been on the county board. I ran a campaign 21 years ago, and two of the people down in the valley asked for this to happen, and it never happened until now. I guess my one concern was the whether or not cell towers have an adverse effect on produce and crops. I did call Organic Valley, and they said they don't have a problem, but they referred me to MOSES, which is a certifying agency in Viroqua. And my problem is that I didn't ask for something in writing. MOSES told me that they are the certifying agency for certifying land to be inorganic and classified as organic. And they basically told me they don't have any problem at all, but they referred me to Eau Claire, a firm in Eau Claire, which certifies on the state level and is the overseeing agency, and I guess they never had a problem either. And I just wanted to really reiterate with Jeff. You read a letter at our meeting from one of these agencies, which I didn't have because I didn't ask them for anything, because they are not going to gig anybody for living underneath a cell tower because they claim there's no
proven, even though I've got a records, you know, just like Maryland does over here, showing from Europe that they have a problem in some cases. Do you, by any chance, have that letter? Could you read that? Because I think that is the key to whether or not there's an adverse effect on the towers and the crops that grow around those towers.
You want the whole
perhaps an abbreviated version of the letter?
All right.
Would be
all right.
The
it's short.
And who it's from?
Yes. The result of this email was from our July meeting. There was questions about health and organic and certification and that. So I had contacted Bonnie Wiedemann, and she's the director of MOSA. And MOSA is the Midwest Organic Sustainable Association, something. Okay. Hello, Jeff. In response to your question in the email below, Erica Guyland was certified by MOSA up until May of 2011. She is still farming organically, but not requesting certification this year. And I have to put in parentheses, that's something that she decided because she's got one crop. And if you don't add additional crops, you don't have to be recertified or continue to be certified because it's an expensive process. I do not know whether or not the location of the cell tower adjacent to her property would influence her customer's decision to purchase her products. The national organic standards do not have any specific restrictions that would preclude certification of a farm located near a cell tower. I do not have any specific information about the effects of cell towers on animal, bees, or plants, but my agency is involved in certification, not research or education. You may want to contact MOSES, the Midwest Organic Sustainable Education Service, in this regard. So to answer the question, the cell tower has no impact on organic certification.
So I have four supervisors who wish to be heard for the first time and then one who wants to be heard a second time. Supervisor Billings.
Thank you. When I look at these issues, I think that it's asking for something above and beyond. So I always look at how it affects the people who were there originally, who were there before the request was made. I also respect the work of the committee, and I thank you. This is a tough one. And there are, with this organic, the question of whether this is going to affect organic farming, it sounds like there are studies both ways and some studies that are coming out in 2012. But Erica Guyland said that she has two buyers who have concerns about it. So I think it appears that it would affect her livelihood. Whether there's a study that backs it up in the United States, one from Europe, one that's due 2012, part of this is perception. And she has customers who have the perception that this is going to be a bad thing, and so she likely will lose buyers on this. So I'm also taking that into account, and I respect Supervisor Pedretti, and I often pay close attention to her votes, that there's no clear and convincing reason to deny this, but and this is a question for Bill Shepard. Is that a reason to deny it if you feel like someone who was there originally, it will affect the livelihood of someone who was there originally?
I can't say that is substantial evidence. No, I cannot conclude that.
So you're saying that because she has no statement from her buyer saying, I will not buy, or, I mean, based on what?
Well, you know, it seems like you have one person that doesn't want it versus many others that do want it for, you know, and I suspect that communications in that area is lacking, and there certainly is a public safety issue in having communications. I think that was one of the driving forces in the 1996 Federal Act, is to not only promote competition but to provide communications to all citizens. And you know, I know that communications in that hilly area has been a problem for a long time. I think Mr. Bina alluded to that. You know, I don't know what the reasons are for those buyers. I think from the record there was an indication that she had six buyers, and I think in the record it was one that said that they, well, I don't know.
Maybe two.
Two, whatever. But, so.
Supervisor Billings has asked Mr. Shepherd a question.
I guess I said I don't think we can conclude that's substantial evidence.
Well, so my understanding legally is that we need a clear and convincing reason to deny this. So
in writing, in the record.
So is there a harm of someone's livelihood? Is that a reason to deny?
I don't think that's clear in the record.
Supervisor Wood.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For you, Mr. Blusky, very elemental but important for my decision. And I don't want this to be a 10-minute lecture. What is the protective value of zoning? Why do we zone? If it is not to say that people who originally make decisions based on zoning that then can be overrided. Why zone?
The first paragraph in Chapter 59 of the Wisconsin statutes will indicate why the purpose of zoning and planning. And in the front of the zoning ordinance, okay, it indicates, along with all other chapters that La Crosse County has, along with the statutes and federal law, the main objective of zoning is to protect the safety, health, and public welfare of the public. But if you read that, and maybe you could pull that up on your screens there, it's the first paragraph, paragraph one. But there's a lot of other stuff that's mixed in there with that. But those are the points that we normally hit on, or the committee does. That's kind of their measuring stick.
Okay. And then has this town, what is the town of what?
Washington.
Washington. Do they have their comprehensive plan completed?
Yes.
Does this concur with their comprehensive plan?
They say it does.
All right.
Supervisor Friedland.
Thank you. There are a few statements that are in the record that concern me, and I'm not certain either whether there are clear and convincing reasons to turn this down. It would be my guess, just as Mr. Shepherd is venturing his opinion, which wouldn't necessarily be the same as a court ruling, although I do find great wisdom in his opinions. And some of the statements that concern me are, first of all, Mr. Frankie, who said that the cell tower company won't know until it goes up, won't know until the tower goes up if there will be adequate coverage. There's also some statements in there about a decrease in property value, a probable decrease of 20% of property value. And there's information about, despite the extended hearing processes, about not being allowed to speak. I believe that was stated in a letter. So I would like to know, Mr. Blusky, what the counter to all that would be. And also, the letter from Mr. Ellison talks about a new site that was just recently discovered. And this letter is dated 8/18. Oh, no, that's for the... Well, actually, I don't see a date on this letter. No, 8/18 is today. That's just when the county board meeting is. So I'm not sure what this site is and if it's that Milsna property or not, if this property has been adequately researched or not, but there's a suggestion made that the that we amend this petition and that we include another site to look at. So I'm wondering if there isn't a process where this could be put off by I don't know, another few months or so, and U.S. Cellular be requested to continue to look for some other sites, because I am really very convinced that, as the letter says, it's not that these people don't want a cell tower. It's not that they don't want cell tower coverage, but it really truly is a matter of finding the best site for it. And I'm just not certain that the best site has been located, that the consulting company has investigated all the possibilities.
Mr. Bleski?
This is where the conflict comes in. The committee does not get the opportunity to pick between two sites. The consultant has made an application. It's their application for one site. They're not picking. They're not telling the committee to pick two sites or three sites. They have gone through their review of these sites, and I think this has been going on for over 3 years in that township. So, things can be said, you know, and if you read the minutes, there's a lot of things that were said. But the committee has to get past the chaff. They've got to get to the meat of this and examine all the evidence. You had mentioned the property value. That was a question that was raised to the consultant. They brought a consultant in, and the consultant proved to the committee with a handout, and I think they were going to do a PowerPoint, but the PowerPoint didn't work for some reason. The opponents are saying that the sales that they used were old sales. It was an appraisal that was done. The opponents indicated that they had looked to appraisers to appraise their property. I think there was three different appraisals or appraisal requests. They didn't bring in any appraisal of the farm that indicated that. They said that in a site you would naturally automatically get a 20% discount. That wasn't proven, so the committee weighs that, and they said, well, there's nothing to dispute. You have to bring in fact. They have to react to fact. So I think this other site that's been brought up at the last minute is a site that they did look at. I think I'd mentioned that they did send an engineer up there. They did a model on it. But the site that they were indicating on this farm had class 1 and 2 soils on it. And we would have to say no to that automatically. As a matter of fact, there was a site on the lease farm, the site up on the map, that was first proposed on class 1 and 2 soils. When we discovered where the site was in our mapping process, they revised. They never made an application, but they finally picked this site. But they looked at three other sites as well as this alternate site. So the committee weighed in on that, and I can't get into their minds on this, but that they weighed the evidence, you know, and it's kind of hard to rehash a public hearing when you had to be there to kind of hear it. So,
did that answer your question, Supervisor Friedland? Supervisor Spiker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I served one of the committee meetings. I served on the we call it zoning committee back in them days. But one thing that impressed me about this is letters we got from the fire departments and fire districts that represent this area, and it kind of touches on what Bill was saying on public safety, and that's why I intend to support this permit. Thank you.
Supervisor Kyle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't think the cell tower is any more hazardous to the people than a high-power transmission line. I'm going to be voted in favor of it.
Supervisor Ferries. You asked to be heard again. Supervisor Burns.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to respond to a couple comments from other supervisors just recently.
I agree with Supervisor Billings. We need to weigh and figure out what the effect, how this is going to affect people's livelihood. In 2003, there was a traffic study that indicated 1,500 vehicles pass through this area daily. Many of these vehicles don't have access to any kind of, they don't have any cell phone coverage, and in emergencies, obviously, is what Mr. Spiker mentioned. I think public safety is a high priority. It's critical, and when you have it, when you have 1,500 vehicles in a rural rural highways that are passing through, that's important. I also want to respond to Supervisor Friedland's comment. Oh, and by the way, I don't know why my parents did this, but I learned how to drive down those highways, and we didn't have cell phones back then, but I'm sure they wish they would have had one because I wasn't always on the road up there. Anyway, but to respond to Supervisor Friedland's comment, property values. I've heard from constituents from Mr. Bina's district that they believe their property value actually increase because they have cell phones. Because you know when you purchase a home, one of the questions you ask will cell phones work? I mean, it's they're so ubiquitous now. It's hard not to have one. But I guess the one thing I kind of struck a nerve though with the new site, and I'm really sensitive. I believe all options should be looked at, and I believe that the petitioner, the process did look at the numerous sites as Mr. Bleschke mentioned, but there's no guarantee. There is no guarantee that you're not going to come up with the same issue if you go to that other site. In fact, I know of a few organic farmers in Middle Ridge that are close or adjacent to that site. So there's no guarantee if you move this site, there's no guarantee that there's not going to be some other organic farmer that's going to be close to the next site. Thank you.
Lastly, Supervisor Hampson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Other than Supervisor Burns' driving history, this is starting to get repetitive. And I'd really like to vote up or down on this proposal. I don't want any more debate. I move to close debate. Let's get on with the vote. Thank you.
It has been moved and seconded to end debate, which is not debatable. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The noes are Supervisors Pedretti and Friedland. Debate is closed. We will vote on the computer on item 8-4. No, debate's closed. So we're ready to vote. Point of information, Supervisor Meyer.
When I put on the floor for approval,
I failed to say the including the 15 conditions on here.
So Supervisor Myers, what we are voting on is the committee report that was moved by Supervisor Meyer and seconded by Supervisor Manti, if I remember that far back in recent memory. Yeah. Is it coming up on computers?
Thank you.
On a vote of 28-2, the motion is approved. Next item, Supervisor Meyer.
Uh, item 8-5, zoning petition number 1871 to amend La Crosse County ordinance filed by James and Joyce Hoverson to rezone from exclusive agriculture district to residential district A for continued single family residential in the town of Holland. This item was approved unanimously, and I move for your approval.
It moved by Supervisor Myers, seconded by Supervisor Bills Kemper. Discussion?
What?
All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. That is approved.
Item 8-6, zoning petition number 1873 to amend La Crosse County zoning ordinance filed by Richard A. Berg, acting on behalf of Arnold and Helen Hoyer, Larry Hoyer, and Natalie George and Elizabeth Hoyer, to rezone from transitional agriculture district to agriculture district A for continued single family residential of three residential homes in the town of Holland. This one also passed unanimously, and I move for your approval.
Mr. Mayor moves the committee report, seconded by Supervisor Pedretti. Discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. That is approved.
Now, don't get too concerned. This next one's a cell phone. Item 8-7, conditional use permit 841, filed by Peter Shaw on Town 80 Real Estate Services Incorporated, acting on behalf of Verizon Wireless and Central States Tower LLC, for Richard and Barbara Schomburg to remove and replace existing 190-foot guided communications tower on 2.3 acres of land zoned agriculture district in the town of Hamilton. This one passed unanimously with 16 conditions. I move for your approval.
Moved by Supervisor Myers, seconded by Supervisor Kyle. The committee report including 16 conditions. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That is approved as well. Is that it for you, Mr. Meyer?
That's it.
It was
lovely
since
9 o'clock. So.
Supervisor Spiker, Public Works and Infrastructure.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will try to move these along as fast as possible using the board rule that to read just parts of the resolution, the main parts by ordinance. Thank you.
First
one is a first consideration of Ordinance 93 to amend State Statute 8-041. It's for driveway access to county trunk highways. I refer this to the next meeting of the county board by board rules.
It will be considered its first reading today, and we will vote next month on the second reading date.
Yes.
Supervisor Schrader, do you have a question on that?
Nope.
Okay, thank you.
It's by board rules is what I'm doing. Item number 8-9, authorization demolition of Lakeview Farm buildings. Whereas La Crosse County has three old farm buildings at the Lakeview Farm in West Salem, which are in deteriorating state and present an increasing liability for the county. First building has been vandalized over the past year. The second building needs to be raised in order that the old well be located between the building can be properly abandoned. Building three is an old boiler room for Lakeview, which contains large amounts of asbestos, and if the underground tunnels that lead to the site to the old Lakeview building, then the tunnels will need to be abandoned. Now, therefore, be resolved that La Crosse County Board does hereby authorize the Facilities Department to contract with the County Highway Department on a time and equipment cost basis, which is estimated at $36,500 for labor, $40,000 for equipment, $23,500 in tipping fees, for an estimated total cost of $100,000, less any revenues that the department would receive from the recycling metals to demolish the three Lakeview buildings. Be further resolved that Facilities Department is authorized to bid out environmental mediation and contract with the lowest vendor to remediate the environmental issue with the three buildings with an estimated cost of $20,000. Be it further resolved that Finance Department is authorized to transfer up to $150,000 from the general fund undesignated fund balance 100-39100 to pay for the environmental remediation and cost of demolition of the three Lakeview buildings. Fiscal note, the estimate cost of demolition of the Lakeview Farm building between $100,000 and $150,000, depending on existence of underground facilities. I move for approval, Madam Chair.
Moved by Supervisor Spiker, seconded by Supervisor Billings. Discussion? Supervisor Mettinger.
Your question may be for Mr. Spiropoulos. I noticed in one of the committee reports it says the demolition is going to cost $100,000. Another committee report it says $200,000. This document says $200,000, $100,000, $150,000. And it seems like it's all over the map.
Mr. Spiropoulos?
The $200,000 comes from the TIF plan. That's what was estimated it to cost, and that was a line item expense in the TIF plan, so that's where the 200 came from. We're estimating between 100 and 150 to do the total project. So that's where the three numbers come from. So, and since drafting this resolution, we have found the old well in the building, so it will have to be abandoned. So. Probably between $8,000 and $10,000, depending on diameter and depth. So,
any other discussion? Supervisor Feehan.
Could we hear from somebody on this committee about why this is considered to be something that needs to happen now and the fiscal impact? I'm also curious about the $23,500 in tipping fees. Isn't that really just shifting money from one department to another?
Supervisor Spiker?
Well, it is. You're shifting from one.
Are you in your microphone? I can't talk.
I got it on.
Okay.
Jim, can you help me out on?
So your question was about tipping fees and then the timing, Supervisor Feehan?
We want to get it done this year. Don't want to delay it any longer because of liability, I guess, would be part of it.
One of the buildings has two holes in the brick structure from vandalism. That building also has a roof that's collapsing because of water damage. So we have a liability there for safety if kids get in there again and something happens to them. We're liable for it because we know about it. The asbestos in the boiler room, we've been trying to deal with this since I've been with the county for 13 years now, and we haven't been able to afford to deal with these buildings. Funding them through the TIF project makes sense. The county will get reimbursed from future property taxes out there. Getting them done all at once is going to be cheaper than one at a time. Trying to think what else, whether question was there. The tipping fee, anything that goes into the landfill, even though it's our landfill, we have to pay for that. So yes, it's shifting from one to the other.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Supervisor Schrader.
I might point out that these are just estimates, that there are no solid figures there.
Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That is carried unanimously.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Item 8-10, authorization to replace facilities department truck. Whereas the facilities department needs to replace a 1998 Toyota Tacoma truck, which was recalled and brought back by Toyota last month for $11,865. Whereas the vehicle is utilized extensively by the facilities department various times by other departments for travel to outlying county sites, to vendors for purchase, supply purchase, and plowing of county parking lots. Whereas the facilities department has advertised and received sealed bids for the replacement Toyota Tacoma truck, and whereas the responsive bids accepted by the Public Works Infrastructure Committee are as follows. The bid recommended is Ewall Chevrolet Buick, $18,310. Whereas the facilities department will need an existing plow mounted on a new vehicle and purchase a new topper. Now, therefore, be resolved that La Crosse County Board does hereby authorize Facilities Department to purchase a 2012 Chevy Colorado compact pickup truck from Ewall Chevrolet Buick in an amount of $18,210. Be it further resolved, the department director is authorized to purchase a new topper to be put on the compact pickup truck. Be further resolved, $11,865 be transferred from the sale of county property account and property management org to purchase the facilities department truck. Be it further resolved that $6,478 transferred from the sale of county property account to a non-departmental org and that $2,600 be transferred from the major capital equipment account in the courthouse law enforcement center org to complete funding for the purchase of the facilities department truck. Fiscal note is total funding transfer is $20,943, $11,865 being transferred from 11-31-56-015 to 11-31-86-050, $6,478 being transferred from 10-64 to org 56-015 to 11-31-86-050, $2,600 will be transferred from 11-42-86-050 to 11-31-86-050. I move for approval, Madam Chair.
Moved by Supervisor Spiker, seconded by Supervisor Jay Johnson. Discussion. Supervisor Doyle.
Where is Ewald Chevrolet?
Oconomowoc, I believe. Is that correct? They have three, don't they? And this one's from Oconomowoc?
Yeah, they're all in that area.
The answer to your question was Oconomowoc County.
Okay, my second question then is, do they bid exactly the same thing as our local dealer, Brennigan?
Yes. Yeah.
So
yes.
We're going out of the area for $170? I have an issue with that.
Supervisor Spiker has...
Jim, do you want to explain about the... Or Bill can explain what... come from the state lately.
It's the curse of the back row middle seat, just so you know.
I just raised an issue that our now chair has always raised in the past, and I think she made a lot of sense on that.
We got the answer for you.
Be nice if the legislature would change the law. just the comment.
Answer, Mr. Shepard.
There, as part of 2011 Wisconsin Act 32, there's a provision that talks about method of bidding, and while it does specifically refer to public contracts, and we looked at the definition, I think that public contracts do mean more of the construction kinds of things. And specifically, it says a contract shall be awarded the lowest responsible bidder, and you may not use a bidding method that gives preference based on geographic location. Strictly, this truck is, I don't think, strictly comes under that statute, but our own finance purchasing policies talk about awarding the bid to the most advantageous awarding the bid that is most advantageous to the county. I think, in at least as far as staff goes, to be consistent with state law and the purpose of the county ordinance, our recommendation to the committee was to award to the lowest responsible bidder. So,
Supervisor Doyle, you still
our
have
rationale.
Are these prices delivered charges? Okay, so there's no additional markup for any sort of delivery or prep or anything like that. Does it include sales tax?
Supervisor Mettinger.
Yeah, I was just going to follow the kind of the same train of thought there about whether the state allows you to when you talk about a responsible bidder, and I'm familiar with this, and obviously we want to benefit the taxpayers. That's the bottom line, you know, the lowest responsible bid. And I know we had an issue like this years ago when we bought cop cars from Madison rather than Dahl Ford. So I understand that, and the local people don't get too happy about that, but the bottom line is you're supposed to benefit the taxpayers, whatever the best deal for them. But when you come into a situation like this where there's $170 difference, and say you had, I don't know Ewald either, I never heard of him before, you had a bad experience previously with Ewald, for example, could you then choose Brennigan because you had the word responsible is in there? Is it still the lowest responsible bidder?
Yeah. Well, sure. I think you could weigh previous experiences with a potential or with a bidder, sure. Well, you know,
at least under the purchase of contracts, as far as, I mean, the equipment part of it, I'm not sure how much leeway you would have on a public construction project, for instance. I think the law is pretty definite on that. But, you know, it's a matter of consistency, and we're trying to be, you know, in requiring staff to go out and bid. We do, on some things, incorporate experience, a service, you know, a lot of factors. So oftentimes, and more complicated projects that we're bidding, there is a range of things that that would be taken into consideration. Trucks, you know, you can, I suppose, a Toyota truck, given certain specifications coming from Ewald, is probably the same as the one coming from Brenigan. So, you know, there's not much leeway there in terms of the experience factor or the more intangible kinds of things.
Just, can I follow it up just real quick?
You still have the floor.
I know people are getting nervous here, I suspect. But again, on a construction project, for example, let's just say, let's use Bliss Road, even though it's a city project.
Sure.
If you fix the road twice and you had the same person fix it twice, and then you bid it out a third time, and the lowest bidder is the first one that fixed the first two times, you're not even suggesting perhaps they didn't fix it appropriately, but they're coming as the lowest bidder again, could you then reject that based upon past experience?
Sure.
And that's the argument you could...
I think that would be a good argument, Mr. Menninger, yeah. I think if they haven't done it in the past and there's been a problem, maybe it's time to try somebody else. Sure, I think that would be persuasive.
Supervisor Cotter.
Thank you. And the issue of $172 jumped at me right away, too. And one of the costs that might well have need to be considered is where, in the event there are problems with the vehicle, where would it be serviced?
Brenigan and Onalaska.
Well, that's the point that I was getting at. I mean, so I think that is an issue of responsibility of being available to service the vehicle without staff spending significant time having to go elsewhere. Thank you.
Supervisor Jay Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. When I asked Mr. Doyle's question at the subcommittee level, the committee was told that because of the state law, we could not go with the Brenigan bid. What I'm hearing now from Mr. Shepard is that there's some leeway. That law doesn't apply strictly to a vehicle purchase such as this. And can we possibly get a yes or no answer if we would vote this down, and I would make a motion to go with the local dealer? We're not going to all be taken to jail for buying a truck locally.
It's a lovely jail, correct? However. Lovely new jail.
True. We all want to go there, but...
You know, I guess the purpose of competitive bidding on a piece of equipment like this that is pretty definite and certain, and one vehicle is the same as another vehicle, no matter who you buy it from, I really discourage... yeah, it's a small dollar amount, but it's kind of a slippery slope. How do you tell staff in terms of doing this in the future what they should take or not take? I think it's unfortunate, but you know the trend certainly, as indicated by the state statute, is geographic location shouldn't make a difference. So my strong recommendation to you, and based on our not only you know an indication of this policy by the state, but also in our own finance purchasing manual, everything else being equal, you should really take the lowest responsible bid, and that's from Ewald. I like Mr. Brenigan. We work with him on the Economic Development Fund. It's a dollar and cents issue, not anything else.
Is that it for you, Supervisor Johnson? Supervisor Wood. Supervisor Cruz.
My question also concerned long-term costs, extended warranty, service location, and all that, and it's been answered with Supervisor Cotter's question. Thank you.
I'm going to call on Mr. Engelson because he has some information.
When Jim reviewed this bid with me, I too was concerned. We
ensure we double check to make sure it was an apples to apples comparison. One thing I want to mention is that even though it will be serviced locally, Brannigan's will get reimbursed by GM. So we will take it to Unalaska. It's the most convenient, and they will be reimbursed for all the warranty work that they would do in the vehicle.
Supervisor Brockmiller.
I had this similar comments to Supervisor Audrey.
Cotter. Supervisor Feehan.
My question is this a flexible fuel vehicle? It's not? Then I'm gonna say that we should vote this down. And I have a question about the timing. If we were to decline to support this, would we have time to rebid in time to get this truck for the coming plowing season?
And can we also ask as part of that whether flex fuel was in the bid? Because that may be a sticking point.
Flex fuel was not in the bid.
Well, in keeping with our county sustainability plan, I think that we should ask for it to be rebid, including flexible fuel.
Flexible fuel in as much as E85 or LP or natural, or I guess flexible fuel means a lot of different things.
Well, I know because I personally ordered one, you can order Chevys for about $200 more that will run on E85.
Okay. We can certainly rebid it. This vehicle is 60 to 90 days out, so getting it by wintertime probably won't happen. Because if we order it in September, it's going to be the end of the year most likely. So, but we certainly can do that. It's up to the direction
okay,
of the board.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to vote against this, and I'm going to urge my fellow supervisors to ask for a rebid that includes flexible fuel options.
Supervisor Plesha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Many times this has come up where people would like to go with a local vendor. The only problem with that is if other vendors want to bid a job or bid a product or whatever, and they know that the local vendor is going to be the one that gets the thing anyway, they'll stop bidding. And I know we've had this problem in the past. I really don't see it's something that we can do anything about. I'd much rather go with someone that's local, but we don't have that choice just with the bidding rules that we have. Thank you.
Supervisor Pedretti.
Thank you. Speaking on the sustainability side, Mr. O'Malley, a memo went out from the Sustainability Committee asking for the department heads to think in purchasing in the future, but that was after this had gone out for bid, correct?
That's correct. That was after your motion, but the memo did go out to all department heads, and specifically the direction was not on flex fuel. It was to have us look at alternative fuel vehicles, LP. If you'd like us to do more similar to, and we're getting more input from the board today, we'll certainly look at more options, but the discussion by Sustainability Commission on looking for alternative fuel vehicles was after this had already been bid and had proceeded, but certainly we can add that as a consideration.
I believe our memo had LP, other energy type of fuel.
Yeah,
there was like five different things listed in that. And when we had this at executive, I too was like, why didn't we, you know, but I also thought this probably went out before. I think we need to start getting the department heads thinking in terms of sustainability, but I also realize Mr. Spiropoulos' timing on this, so I'm going to vote in favor. Thank you.
Supervisor Cotter.
Thank you. Just back to the issue of the servicing situation, I think that is something that is an over and above service that is given that is needed to be within a contract is to have the availability of service within a reasonable distance. Now, it's different in if it's not a motor vehicle, but a motor vehicle requires a different type of maintenance that if we don't do it in our own shop, then it has to be taken somewhere. And so to say that one dealer is available to provide local servicing and the other dealer is not available, that's where you can weigh the difference of $172, in my opinion. Thank you.
Supervisor Burns.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A question for Mr. Spiropoulos. Would you just this truck is for the downtown campus only, correct?
Correct.
Would you contract out those services then to some private party?
No, we would use other equipment in the meantime, but it's something that's needed down here.
Okay. So you have more than one
vehicle.
Okay, thank
Correct.
You.
Supervisor Mettinger.
Yes, I would encourage everybody to vote in favor of this resolution. I'm actually a little bit surprised by some of the discussion. If, for example, Ray Hudson was still in town and this was the city of La Crosse versus West Salem, would we be having the same discussion? Or would we be dividing ourselves versus city of La Crosse versus outside the city of La Crosse? Again, let me remind you, the purpose of these bids is to benefit the taxpayers. And you should take the lowest responsible bid, and else you have reason not to. The fact that somebody can do oil changes locally is, you know, you can do the oil changes on a Chevy in downtown La Crosse, too. You don't have to take it to a Chevy dealer to do an oil change or get tires. I mean, so I think that argument's a little bit specious or whatever. And let me remind you again, I remember one time we bought 5 police cars. They had to be Crown Victorias. We specifically said they had to be Crown Vics, so they were Fords. Had to be Fords. They couldn't be Chevrolets. And then we only had, Crown Vic dealers bid on it. And the lowest responsible bid came from Madison, not Dahl Ford. And I know the Dahl family was not very happy, but we bought the ones from Madison because of the purpose of it is to benefit the taxpayers. And I just think we don't have a reason to reject this bid.
We'll be voting on the computer. That's a warning to the clerk. Second to last speaker, Supervisor Johnson.
Thank you. I rarely disagree with the distinguished Mr. Mettinger, but I do have to disagree on this. Both of those dealers would have been local, and I think that spending this money locally rather than in a distant county definitely benefits our taxpayers in terms of our economy. Thank you.
Supervisor Spiker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with Mr. Mettinger. but I want to give you a good example. When I served on a village board in Holman, we had exactly the same thing. And we had 2 bidders, one local, one not that far from Holman. And the village board, I was not part of it, gave the bid to the one from Holman, even though it was higher. And I talked to the gentleman from, I can't remember, he was from someplace in Wisconsin. He said, I will guarantee you one thing. If this local was low bid, I have no complaints at all with you. But I bid it. I took my time. I had low bid. I met all your specs and that. Yet you turn around and do that. He says, I will guarantee you one thing. We'll never bid on anything in Holman again. Thank you.
Supervisor Billings.
I'll pass.
Supervisor Doyle.
You know, moving me to the back here, I've been co-opted by my seatmate, Mr. Fee, and I agree with him on this issue. On the issue of sustainability, if you look long-term, it is in the best interest of the county. Forget about where these vehicles come from, and maybe the next one, if we rebid it and we do the E85 or the alternative fuel, it's going to come again from Oconomowoc. That's fine. But I think that Mr. Feehan makes a really good point, as does Jay Johnson, which is we have been designated by ourselves as a sustainable county. This is one of the things we should be looking at. And I think it makes sense to rebid this and ask for alternates. We could have the various types of fuel, you know, give us these 3 options or whatever, and we pick whichever makes the best sense long-term for the county. So it's really not about $170. It's about the long-term interests of the county, and that's why I support voting no on this matter.
On the computer, if you are in, vote yes. If you are in favor of the resolution as presented, vote no. If you are opposed. The vote is 10 in favor, 18 opposed. The resolution fails. And you have one more item, I think, Supervisor Spiker.
So what do you want the committee or what's the board saying then?
They reject this resolution.
And staff would take direction that to rebid and consider the recommendation of the Sustainability Commission to include or sustainability group to include flexible fuel, E85, all those things as an option, and figure out how to rebid. I mean,
I'm sure they'll be listening to the whole debate because they're and take okay. direction that, from that.
I wouldn't bring this back to committee without having going through a rebid, considering those. That's clear.
8-11, reorganization of County Highway Department Mechanical Shop. Highway Commissioner Ron Chamberlain has reviewed the highway department structure for efficiency and coverage, and whereas the number of vacancies provide a current opportunity to rearrange department organization for a small cost by changing existing positions, whereas the Highway Commission has presented a plan to the county administrator which makes efficient use of highway department funding through reorganization which does not increase the total number of staff in the department, and the county administrator approves of the plan, a copy of which plan is attached and made part of the resolution. Now, therefore, resolve that the attached plan of reorganization be approved for the Highway Department, including creation one shop superintendent at pay grade B-17, effective September 1st, 2011, provided that the total number of staff in the department shall not increase. It further resolved that finance personnel departments are authorized and directed to make changes necessary to carry out intent of this resolution. Fiscal note, the estimated annual increased cost of creating one new shop superintendent position for the remainder of 2011 is $1,906 in wages, $308 in fringe benefits for a total of $2,294, and is projected total 12-month increase of $6,884. This increased cost for 2011 will be covered by the savings due to current vacancies within the department. Furthermore, shop costs, including the position, are machinery and fund expenses and not budgeted under levy dollars. I move for approval, and Mr. Chamberlain will be here.
It's been moved by Supervisor Spiker, seconded by Supervisor Kyle. Mr. Chamberlain?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the board. In looking at the operations of the Highway Department as coming on board, I had not intended originally to look at something of this magnitude this quick. However, we had a gentleman transfer out of the shop foreman position, which necessitated a review of the position and the position's duties and the operation in the shops anyway. So we conducted that review, and really what this is about is efficiency and effectiveness. We're looking at doing always more with less money. We're looking at less downtime if the shop is run in a more professional manner, especially in light of today's technology changes. You've heard about you just had a discussion on sustainable fuels. One of our directives has been to explore the sustainability in our fueling systems. We need somebody that's technically competent to conduct that exploration and then to work on the specifications for the equipment coming out. We're currently entering the era with we're looking at Tier 4 engines due to air quality. That again is another issue that we don't have anybody on board that's real up and tight on that. That's quite frankly not my expertise. We're looking at new fuels. We're looking at fuel efficiency. We're looking at a professional management of a $12 million fleet. This isn't a qualifications on seniority basis. This is a qualifications on knowledge basis. We're looking at reductions in possible ways to reduce overhead costs, i.e. better inventory control, computerized inventory control. We're looking at options for supporting other entities, i.e. the townships, the cities, the villages, and other departmental folks within the county family. We're looking at better equipment coordination, and last but certainly not least, we're faced with an increasing demand for winter services, and this position will aid in the call situation, thus providing those services. And with that, I would take any questions.
Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. It is carried unanimously.
Thank you.
Supervisor Burke, just a reminder to everybody, we're adding in items 8-16, 17, and 19 at the end of the agenda, those two addendums that came down. So be ready for those, please. Supervisor Burke?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Item 812, to honorable members of La Crosse County Board of Supervisors, acknowledging the best of public service, whereas the following employee has been a faithful part in providing the best of public service to La Crosse County, Sally A. House, Lakeview Health Center, 11 plus years. Whereas it is the wish of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors to acknowledge long and faithful service on behalf of the citizens of La Crosse County, now therefore be it resolved that a resolution extending our congratulations be recorded in La Crosse County Board proceedings and a certificate of our actions be presented as an expression of our gratitude. I move its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Burke, seconded by Supervisor Wood. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. That is approved unanimously.
Item 813, to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors, regarding general supervision of the MPO director. Whereas in September 2001, the La Crosse County Board approved making facilities available and providing administrative services for two full-time staff for the La Crosse Area Planning Committee, acting as the Metropolitan Planning Organization, to carry out long-range transportation planning and transit service for the urbanized areas in La Crosse County and Crescent, Minnesota, beginning January 1, 2002. And whereas the County Board approved providing the LAPC MPO staff with county benefits being administered through a separate budget under the La Crosse County Zoning, Planning, and Land Information Department, and whereas the job description for the MPO director position states that this is a professional regional planning position and that that policy and program direction is provided by the LAPC, and general supervision of the position is provided by the La Crosse County Director of Zoning, Planning, and Land Information, and whereas the LAPC has requested that the general supervision of the MPO director, including evaluation of the job performance of the MPO director, be transferred from the Director of Zoning, Planning, and Land Information and the LAPC to the La Crosse County Administrator for the reason that it would be in the best interest of all LAPC members in the county that the MPO director should answer directly to the county administrator, who has a statutory duty to supervise the heads of all the departments of the county. Now, therefore, be it resolved, that La Crosse County does hereby authorize that the general supervision of the MPO director, including job performance evaluations, be transferred from the Director of Zoning, Planning, and Land Information and the LAPC to the La Crosse County Administrator, who shall supervise the MPO director in the same manner as all other heads of departments of La Crosse County. Further be it resolved that the personnel department shall make the necessary changes in the MPO director job description and the various departmental organizational charts to carry out the intent of this resolution. Fiscal note, changing the general supervision of the MPO director is an administrative change that does not have a fiscal impact. I move its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Burke, seconded by Supervisor Cotter. Discussion? Supervisor Schrader.
Thank you. Who currently provides the benefits for the LAPC staff?
Mr. O'Malley, you want to respond?
The MPO budget is primarily funded by contributions from the local municipalities in that contribution. It's actually in your budget. There is no county dollars involved. It's mainly federal and state revenue, and then municipal revenue provides the match from the towns and villages that make up the LAPC. It's a per capita amount. I think it's $60,000 a year. I don't recall the formula how that's figured out, but the LAPC are the ones that have been supervising the position.
So these people are not county staff then?
No. The two positions that are there, the director and the bike ped coordinator, or transportation planner, excuse me, I think is their title, are on the county payroll, but there is no county levy involved. We provide overhead, we provide the office, provide a small amount of indirect charge back to that operation, and then as you can see, there's been conflict about who actually is supervising the position.
Thank you. I didn't know things were changing. Thanks.
Any other discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That is approved unanimously.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Item 814, to the honorable members of the La Crosse County Board of Supervisors, regarding the claim of John Malfi. Whereas John Malfi has filed a claim alleging that while he was traveling in the East Lane on County Highway 16 on July 20, 2011, the road had exploded, leaving the pavement broken and resulting in damage to his vehicle's tire and rim in the total amount of $85. And whereas the above stated claim does not appear to be meritorious and should be disallowed, now therefore be it resolved that the claim of John Malfi against La Crosse County, its officers, officials, employees, and agents is hereby disallowed. And further be it required that notice of disallowance of this claim shall be served on the claimant by registered or certified mail and the receipt thereof. therefore, signed by the claimant or the returned registered letter shall be proof of service. Be it further resolved that the claimant is notified that no action on this claim against La Crosse County nor against any of its officers, officials, agents, or employees may be brought after 6 months from the date of service of this notice of disallowance. Fiscal note, the cost to La Crosse County for sending certified mail restricted delivery to the claimant is $10.09. I move its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Burke, seconded by Supervisor Billings. Discussion. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. That is carried unanimously. Supervisor Burke, if you would take the chair for the appointments, which is agenda item 8, 16, and 17.
Chairperson Johnson.
Thank you, Supervisor Burke. I have two appointments. Steve Doyle to the Economic Development Fund to replace Vicki Burke. Just to clarify that Vicki currently serves as an appointee as a county board supervisor, and since her election to first vice chair, she will take that spot, creating a vacancy for a county board supervisor. And secondly, Joe Veenstra, who also was a member a couple years ago, and I'm requesting an appointment to replace Mary Jo Werner, who recently submitted her resignation. So I move their approval.
Okay, motion by Chair Johnson, second by Supervisor Brock Miller to approve the appointments. Is there any discussion? Usually it has been they have been taken together, but. Supervisor Fian asked if they should be taken separately. You certainly have that option to divide any question, but. Okay. All right. Any other discussion? Other discussion? All right. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion is carried.
Thank you. Lastly, we have item 8-19, Supervisor Plesha.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have 8-19 regarding Hillview roof replacement. Whereas the roof at Hillview Health Care Center was damaged in the hailstorm that occurred on April 10th, 2011, and the Hillview roof was also sustained water damage to the underside of the eave unrelated to the hailstorm, and whereas the local government property insurance fund will cover a portion of the hailstorm damage, and whereas the request of the facilities department, Vantage Architects prepared bid specifications for replacement of the Hillview roof, and the department published ads and sealed competitive bids by interested contractors to perform the regular work, and whereas bids were received on August 15, 2011 from the following companies: Interstate Roofing for $360,950, Seamless Siding and Roofing for $424,265.50, and Lediger Roofing for $521,815. Whereas Interstate Roofing was the lowest competitive bidder and is recommended to be awarded the contract to replace the Hillview roof, and whereas the total cost of Hillview roof replacement is in the amount of $371,700, which includes the contractor's bid and architectural fees, the insurance deductible, project contingency, and eave and vent repair, whereas the insurance company is expected to cover the amount of $341,700 for this project. Now, therefore, it be resolved, La Crosse County Board hereby awards the bid to Interstate Roofing, who has the lowest responsible bid for the replacement of the Hillview roof, in the amount of $360,950. Be it further resolved, the Finance Department shall make the necessary budget adjustments and carry out the intent of this resolution. Fiscal note, the insurance portion of the roof replacement is as follows. Contractor's bid related to the hail damage was $339,200, plus Vantage Architects fees of $5,000, less the deductible of $2,500, resulting in insurance payment of $341,700. The county's portion of the project is the deductible of $2,500 and a contingency for $5,750 for the even even vent repair of $21,750, resulting in a total cost for the project in the amount of $30,000, which will be taken from Org 350, account 39100, Hillview undesignated fund balance. I move for its approval.
Moved by Supervisor Plesha, seconded by Supervisor Ferries. Discussion on this item. Supervisor Schrader.
When the bids were put out, was metal roofing considered?
That comment was asked, or that question was asked earlier.
Mr. Spiropoulos, perhaps can clarify the discussion that happened in the joint meeting prior to this one.
Yes, it was discussed. The cost is half again or better, more than a asphalt roof. So we opted at that time to do asphalt.
But they're not asphalt now, are they? The shingles?
Fiberglass. It's a mix.
Any other discussion? Supervisor Mettinger.
Did you clarify that this requires, what's it, a two-thirds
yes.
vote? Or?
This requires a two-thirds vote.
And that's of all 35, right? So you need like 24 votes or something?
Yes.
Something like that.
There's only about 27 or 28
24
people
votes.
Here. So.
Supervisor Bina.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The only question I had, it just seems, I remember, didn't we re-roof this about 3 years ago or something, 4 years ago?
This was re-roofed in 1990.
1990?
Seems like just yesterday, doesn't it, Mr. Bina?
It just seemed like yesterday.
Yeah.
It just seemed like we discussed this, but we maybe never did anything out there then in that case. I thought we re-roofed this a little bit ago.
21 years ago.
Supervisor Feehan.
What kind of asphalt shingles are we talking about here? Are these 30-year, 40-year? What's the expected life?
30-year.
Thank you.
Any other discussion? Ms. Supervisor Schrader.
Just a question, not discussion. How long is a metal roof? What's the life expectancy of that?
That I don't know. I do know that metal roofs do get damaged in hailstorms as well. But they do last longer. You're correct.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. It is carried unanimously, which is sufficient number of votes to meet the two-thirds requirement. I failed earlier on in the agenda to note cards and correspondence on the bulletin board in the back of the room, and I apologize for that. Mr. O'Malley, you have a reminder before we do future agenda items?
That's what I wanted to talk
about. Go ahead.
Future agenda items, I had mistakenly suggested a meeting of PRD. We can't do that. Shepherd corrected me on that, but if we could have the chair and vice chair of PRD meet right immediately after this with the zoning director so we can try to figure out what's happening to your next agenda. Thank you.
And also, if we, just a reminder to everyone, if you have additional suggestions for how we might promote, advertise, make the public aware of the zoning ordinance changes beyond what we discussed this morning, please make sure to let Jeff or Charlie know. Supervisor Friedland, did you have your hand up on a future agenda item? No, I just saw you. Any other future agenda items? Supervisor Spiker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I requested about 3 or 4 months ago to the county board that we have a background on what is happening at West Salem Business Park, either through the planning committee meeting or something on there, because reading through the minutes of the economic development, I don't know if they're right or not, that we haven't put a business in that park in 2 years.
Just coincidentally, I was talking with the community development director. We're updating that, especially with the new TIF numbers, so I would expect within the next month or so, probably as part of the budget process, because you'll be dealing with the business park budget, an entire update on where we're at as well as how we're projecting ahead costs. So that's very
and
timely.
You also got an update from the Village of West Salem on their TID district. Is that correct?
Right. That's what I'm talking about, is it's all related to the same matter, so it's going to be very timely during budget process.
Okay.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Somebody else had their hand up. Supervisor Bina, will you please make sure you do not log out until we are adjourned? messes up the computer system.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We've been reading a lot about what's happening in the paper with an accident. At some point in time, I would like to hear our legal attorney's viewpoint about what's happening. And I know you haven't settled the whole thing yet, but at some point, I'd like to hear the story.
Any other? Yeah, I'm sure there'll be a closed session agenda item for that. Any other future agenda items? Then just a last reminder. Oh, go ahead, Supervisor Richmond. Just a reminder that the picnic is coming up in just a few minutes. And there's a note from Supervisor Benrood that if you haven't signed up and you want to go because you've had so much fun already today and you want the fun to continue, they have a couple of extra meals ordered, so please feel free to go out and you can settle up with either Supervisor Benrood or Supervisor Sobranek. So we hope to see everyone out there who can be there. Supervisor Friedland. I have no idea. Does anybody know?
Jerry told me
noon. Quick, get out to West Salem without a speeding ticket. Supervisor Richmond. It's been moved by Supervisor Richmond, seconded by Supervisor Friedland. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. We are adjourned. Thank you.